I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
This is Religion Today with Martin Tanner. A weekly look at religion and spirituality here at home and around the world. Now, here's your host, Martin Tanner.
Welcome. This is Religion Today. I'm your host, Martin Tanner. Today's program is for Denise, who listens from the Ogden, Utah area, and her son Dylan, who listens from Denver, Colorado. It's about near-death experiences. Some of my latest thoughts, the research that I've been involved in, and some fascinating stories that I thought I might share with you about near-death experiences. Skeptics say near-death experiences can't be real because, gee, there are a lot of books on them now, but if they were real, why were they first described in a book called Life After Life, published by Dr. Raymond Moody in 1975? Well, the answer is there were experiences that we call near-death experiences way before the book Life After Life that was published by Moody in 1975. Here are just a few of the dozens and dozens and dozens of examples of that. In 1861, there was a woodcut, the title of which is The Saintly Throng Ascending into Heaven. It shows people ascending into heaven. It's a woodcut by Paul Gustave Doré. It was made, again, in 1861. Here's one from the LDS genre. Apostle Jedediah M. Grant, born February 21st, 1816. About a week before he passed away on December 1st of 1856, had a couple of near-death experiences, which he shared with his friend Heber C. Kimball, who related them at the funeral of Apostle Jedediah M. Grant. Here's what Heber C. Kimball said, quote, "I went to see him, Jedediah M. Grant, one day last week. I laid my hands upon him and blessed him and asked God to strengthen his lungs that he might be easier. And in two or three minutes, he raised himself up and talked for about an hour as busily as he could, telling me what he had seen and what he understood. He said to me, 'Brother Heber, I've been into the spirit world two nights in succession. And of all the dreads that ever came across me, the worst was to have to again return to my body. But, oh,' says he, 'the order and government that were there. When in the spirit world, I saw the order of righteous men and women. I beheld them organized in their several grades, and there appeared to be no obstruction to my vision.' He said that the people he saw there were organized in family capacities. He saw his wife. She was the first person that came to him, and he saw many that he knew. He said that his wife looked beautiful and had their little child that died on the plains in her arms, and said, 'Here's little Margaret. You know that the wolves ate her up, but it didn't hurt her. Here she is, and she's all right.'" Close quote. He went on to say, quote, "The temple erected by Solomon was much inferior to the most ordinary buildings in the spirit world. I've seen good gardens on this earth, but I never saw any to compare with those that were there. I saw flowers of numerous kinds, and some with some 50 to 100 different flowers growing upon one stalk. The source for this, if you want to look it up, is Journal of Discourses, Volume 4, starting on page 135. Joseph Smith had two experiences which are important to mention here in connection with NDEs. Remember how many near-death experiencers travel to meet God through a tunnel. Well, Joseph Smith says in his personal history that when Moroni came and visited him after delivering his message, he went back to heaven through a conduit or a tunnel. This is in verse 43 of the Joseph Smith history. There's a little-known experience about Joseph Smith, only mentioned in a few kind of obscure secondhand places, that when Joseph Smith was dragged outside, severely beaten and then tarred and feathered when he and Emma were at the Johnson farm, that Joseph Smith's spirit briefly left his body and he looked down at what was happening. When he was left for dead, his spirit returned to his body. So Joseph Smith himself had a short NDE. Moving earlier in time, there's a fascinating painting by Hieronymus Bosch that was painted in about 1490. It's called The Ascent of the Blessed. It shows those who are righteous clearly going through a tunnel into heaven. We don't have time to go through all the many, many examples, but if you would like to take a look at a number of those, there's a fabulous book called Otherworld Journeys by Carol Zaleski, in which she describes near-death experiences from the Middle Ages and many others. She talks about experiences from 750 and earlier. There are other accounts of near-death experiences by Pope Gregory that were in about 593, 594. There are scriptural accounts of something that is quite close to near-death experiences in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 1 through 5. In about 31 AD or so, Paul says that he visited heaven. He went up to the third heaven. King Lamoni in the Book of Mormon in Alma chapter 18, verses 42 and 43, is in a coma for 3 days, and he comes back, and he's apparently experienced something close to a near-death experience. His wife had a similar experience. Alma chapter 19, starting in verse 13, going on through verse 34. Plato's Republic, in about 368 BC, the account of Ur is something very close to a near-death experience. So we see that these kinds of accounts have been around for a long, long time. They are not recent. What would a near-death experience feel like? Those who have had them know. Those who have not had them only wonder. Dr. Eben Alexander, a neurosurgeon who had such an experience, who spoke here in Salt Lake City 3 or 4 years ago, said this, quote, "Those who have had near-death experiences will tell you that realm is far more real than this world, more crisp, vibrant, alive," close quote. I think that's a great description. So what are near-death experiences and what are they like? There are a number of different elements of near-death experiences. No one person has them all. If you went on a vacation to Paris and you had 100 other people who went to Paris, all of you would see something of Paris, but no two would have the same experience. That's why NDEs are a little bit analogous to going somewhere else in this world, even though you're going to another world. Not everybody experiences exactly the same thing. So if you had one, you might have some kind of great distress from an accident or illness or something. Often people describe buzzing or ringing sound in their ears. Their spirit leaves through the top of their head Often, they look down at their body. They meet deceased friends or relatives on occasion. They find themselves in a beautiful place with trees, flowers, water. They frequently describe a heightened sense of sight, hearing, smell, touch. They often are drawn towards a distant light which emanates great love. They travel to the light at an incredible speed. Children are often escorted by a woman named Elizabeth. Fascinating that a lot of kids come up with the same description and name for their guide. When we come back, more of the basic elements of a near-death experience on this program for Denise and Dylan. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today.
Religion Today with Martin Tanner continues on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
We're back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. When we took our break, we were just talking about traveling at an incredible speed, children often being escorted by a woman named Elizabeth. Here are some of the other elements of a near-death experience. People describe going through a tunnel or a conduit to heaven, as Joseph Smith in the Joseph Smith History described Moroni leaving and going back to heaven through a conduit. They sometimes meet deity, God or Jesus, sometimes both, as in a little girl I interviewed named Crystal Merzlock, who sat on Heavenly Father's lap and talked with Jesus. She saw both of them. Children typically don't have a life's review. Most adults do. They describe it as living their entire life in panorama in every detail in three dimensions. They say that repented of items are simply missing. And they also say that one fascinating part of them is that they not just review their life, but they have something they never had, which is an exquisite, detailed knowledge of how what they have done has affected others. They find that communication is by thought, not voice. Communication is far more precise. Travel is almost instantaneous, as if by thought. They describe all knowledge as being available. They describe life in this world as being planned out in advance in a classroom-like setting before they come here, much like a day planner, but not in the sense that everything is forced. In other words, it's just a plan. We still have our free agency. In the next world, there are different levels and places. Some people have visions of the future, like a good friend of mine, Elaine Durham, who, if we have time, I'll mention again. Some I have interviewed have met unborn children who were later born into their families. I've heard now more than a dozen experiences where people see pets that have died who were close to them, often dogs, occasionally cats, and sometimes even horses I've heard about. Some describe a distant, beautiful city full of learning technology and some amazing places. Most are given a chance to go back. Some are told they must go back. Occasionally, one will see a border or limit, and they're told that if they go beyond it, they will not be able to come back, presumably because they learned or knew too much, which would thwart their purpose here. People are told to come back for an important purpose in life not yet completed, but they're rarely told what that purpose is. But everyone describes when they come back two great purposes for life: to gain knowledge, but even more importantly, to learn to love the same way and with the same kind of quality that God loves. When they come back, they often have a sense of urgency to do all the things that they're supposed to do. Re-entering their body is often very uncomfortable and painful. When people come back, they often have a reordering of priorities in their life. They have sometimes a difficulty in adjusting because things have such a different perspective for them now. They often change direction with work or family. They have no fear of death. Now, people, no one has all of those traits or experiences, but many people have a good number of them. Skeptical theories like hallucinations, dreams, or drug-induced kinds of experiences, activity of the brain before shutting down, those sorts of things just don't work. Hallucinations are very different in quality. Everyone who has a hallucination knows what they're like, and they are very different from NDEs. Dreams, similarly, are different. You can tell the difference between real life and a dream. So can those who have near-death experiences. Drugs do not lead to near-death experiences. People who have drug-induced experiences describe them as very different from NDEs. And the activity of the brain before it shuts down is something that cannot be shown to be tied at all to near-death experiences. Here are some of the most amazing NDEs that I have ever heard. I mentioned before Elaine Durham, a friend of mine who I've thought about a lot. She passed away just a few months ago on March 29th of this year. She had a series of strokes in a hotel in Chicago, and she was given last rites and pronounced dead. She saw visions of the future in which she was told that just as we can make decisions that will alter our future, so society as a whole could make decisions that would affect the future's outcome one way or another. I remember when 9/11 happened, I had this phone call from Elaine in which she was very animated saying, I told you that there were great destructions that would happen in the future. This is one of the things that I saw, which I thought was quite fascinating. One of the things she told me during my first interview with her, which was in Indiana, where she then lived, was that she was told that she would find a denomination to join. She hopped in her car and began to drive west. She was eventually going to meet up with a friend in Washington State in the Seattle area, a lady named Kim Clark. Elaine Durham's car broke down in the Salt Lake City area, and she never left Utah, except for vacation. She eventually joined the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints because she became absolutely convinced that that was the denomination that she was to join, as described in her near-death experience. Other fascinating near-death experiences include the one of Vicki Noratuk, who was blind from birth. She never saw anything, but during her near-death experience, she was able to see and didn't understand it because she had nothing to compare it to before. She finally was able to realize that she was experiencing sight because she had touched the pattern on her wedding ring so many times that she recognized the sight of it, and from there was able to gather in and understand what sight was. I talked to firefighters who all, meaning seven of them, had had a simultaneous near-death experience in Colorado when fighting a fire. The wind changed and came back over them. All seven of them left their bodies under the tents that were supposed to be a fire break for them, went up and were standing in a fire as it passed by them. Then they all at the same time went back into their bodies after the fire had passed by. The fire was so intense that the axe heads of metal were melted outside these fabric tents that were meant to break the heat. That was a fascinating story. Everyone has near-death experiences eventually, but some people have them and are able to come back and tell others about them. I love near-death experiences of children, and I'll finish up with this one from a little boy named Chris Evans, who came from a not particularly religious family. And when he told a friend of mine, Dr. Melvin Morse, a pediatrician, about his near-death experience, he said, "Oh, Dr. Morse, I have a wonderful secret to tell you. You'll see when you get there someday. It's a wonderful place." Near-death experiences are real, and I find them fascinating because they coincide with the teachings of my faith. Join me again next week. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.